The big problem that a lot of sports teams fall into where they struggle is they start watching the scoreboard. The big problem that a lot of business people fall into is they start looking at the outcome and they forget the process. And the process is what's going to achieve the outcome if you get the process right.
You are listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you the best minds in business and real estate to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching, and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Elevate Podcast, where we delve into some of the most interesting minds in business and in real estate for the best game-changing tips and strategies for you to implement to elevate your business. I'm Samantha McLean, editor of Elite Agent and host of this week's show. Today, we welcome rugby league legend Wayne Pearce. Wayne's rise from humble beginnings growing up in the inner Sydney suburb of Balmain to become an international rugby league player is one of those great inspirational stories. His many rugby league accomplishments include being voted Players Player of the Tour for the undefeated 1982 Invincibles Kangaroos, winning the Harry Sunderland Medal as Australia's best player in the 1984 Test Series against Great Britain, and captaining the New South Wales Origin team to their first ever clean sweep in 1986. Wayne later coached the Blues in 2000, where he became the only person to both captain and coach a series clean sweep in the history of State of Origin. Wayne's contribution to rugby league and the community was then recognised when he was honoured with a Medal of the Order of Australia in 1988. Wayne now lends his expertise to the corporate world via his company, Wayne Pearce Advantage, and will be speaking at the Business of Real Estate in September this year on the topic of recruiting, coaching, and leading a super high-performance team. Elite Agent readers and listeners have access to a $445 discount, but it's only available up until July 31. You can check the show notes on our website, eliteagent.com, for details. I hope you enjoyed this episode, which is full of great lessons and parallels between the sporting and business worlds. If you do, please share it with your industry colleagues. And of course, hit that iTunes subscribe button. For show notes and links to this episode, please visit our website, eliteagent.com/elevate. Now, every great business, both in and out of the real estate industry, is built on great processes. And this week's sponsor is Process Street, a simple and powerful way to manage your team's recurring checklists and procedures, whether they happen to be on the road or in the office. For more information about Process Street and some ready-made checklists for real estate agents, please also visit the show notes for this episode on our website. Right now, it's on with the show. I hope you enjoy this episode with one of Australia's true sporting legends. Okay, so welcome to the podcast, Wayne Pearce.
Thank you very much, Samantha. Great to be here.
It's awesome to have you here, and I'm sure that there are going to be many rugby league fans listening in today and super excited to hear from you. But for the uninitiated, I have to ask the first question. How did you get the nickname Junior?
I came into first grade as a relatively young player at that time. I started playing when I was 19 in the forwards, which was relatively young, but that's not why I got called Junior, because when I started playing, they were calling me Piercy, but Piercy's not good enough, and most footy players have got to have some sort of nickname other than a slang of their surname. So for me, I got busted flexing in the mirror one day because I was doing weight training and I started to bulk up, and I'm thinking I'm going pretty good, so I thought I'd check myself out in the mirror, and one of the other guys saw me flexing up in the mirror, so he said, Flexy, we're going to call you Flexy. So they started to call me Flexy, but there was another guy came from another club. He was a fitness guy, a trainer, and his nickname was already Flexy. And he was older than me, so he became Flexy Senior, and I became Flexy Junior. And that was too much of a mouthful, so I got shortened to he was Senior and I was Junior. But now my son is called Junior because he's the Junior real piece. Junior.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's playing State of Origin now too, isn't he?
Yeah, he played in the third State of Origin, which they won, which was fantastic.
Yeah, it was good to see New South Wales get up. I am a Blues supporter, obviously.
Yeah, you look battered around after quite a few years of being in the doldrums.
But it's good because today we're going to talk about the glory days. So from when you were both a State of Origin coach and also playing State of Origin. But let's just go back to beginnings in Balmain. When you started playing rugby league, obviously you had a dream. Did you always see yourself playing rugby league for Australia?
No. When I was a young kid, when I was a really young kid, didn't play rugby league until the age of 10. And I was inspired to play because the year before, what happened was the Tigers won the competition in 1969, the Balmain Tigers, and I was a huge Tigers supporter. Myself and my two younger brothers were all inspired to go and sign up and play with the local police boys club. So I started playing at the age of 10 and was really passionate about the Tigers. I sold soft drinks on the hill, a bit of pocket money. I sold hot dogs at the ground, really passionate about the club. And, yeah, I dreamt of playing for the Tigers one day, never ever really thought it was going to happen until things fell into place and I got a bit of confidence and I started making the junior rep teams, and the rest is history.
And the rest is history. It wasn't always easy for you. Like, you had a number of setbacks in your career, injuries and things like that. Like, you had an injured knee, and as you were saying before, you needed to bulk up to stand up to some of the other guys. How did you manage to get past all of that? Like, what was the mindset that you used to get past these setbacks to actually get to the level that you did?
The biggest setback I ever had was when I was 14 and my father died suddenly. And we were a battling working class family. And when the breadwinner passes away suddenly and you're the oldest son, it was sort of a bit of a rough period. I went off the rails and sort of, yeah, it was a bit of a rough period. But I got back on track with the help of a mentor. And then when I was back on track, my mentor helped me set some goals. And that was when I realized that, you know, I'd overcome a pretty big setback. All the future setbacks were nothing compared to that. So, yeah, I detached the retina in my eye when I was 19. I had hepatitis B, which is really, really serious, when I was 18. Put me out for 6 months of footy. Yeah, there's a whole lot of setbacks, knee injuries and all that sort of stuff, but nothing really compared with the biggest setback that I had early on. And when I overcome that, everything else is doable.
Yeah. I read somewhere about that. That was what gave you the drive to become so fit and so healthy, was that you were determined that you were going to be, you know, here for a long time.
Yeah. Well, my dad died. He was 45 years of age and he had a heart attack, but he was a big drinker of alcohol and he didn't look after himself with diet or exercise. So for me, there were some messages that I sort of took away from that episode. I've never drunk and I look after myself and train a fair bit. So for me, there was a positive that came out of it, and that sort of helped my footy preparation.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to be speaking at the Business of Real Estate in a couple of months' time on the topic of peak performance, and I think it's really interesting that they've got a sporting legend in there to talk about peak performance, because there are no bigger lessons, I think. I interviewed Glenn McGrath a couple of years ago on the topic as well. And he was sort of talking about the moments of intense pressure that define you, whether it's a must-take wicket or a must-win match, which is a really good leadership metaphor as well. So, as I said, we're going back to the glory days of 1986 when you were leading – was it the New South Wales Tigers?
The New South Wales Blues, the state of origin.
The New South Wales Blues. Yeah. There was a lot of Tigers in there though, wasn't there?
There were actually. There were quite a few Tigers in that side for sure.
So talk me through game one. Like, you were – New South Wales was in front and then behind, and then probably in State of Origin, you know you've got to win the first match to set yourself up for the next one. What goes through a captain's mind when you're in that position?
For me, it's really about just trying to keep your players focused on the fundamentals, on the basics. And the thing is, if you tense up and you watch the scoreboard, then it makes it really, really difficult to be your best. You're chasing your tail. So it's really about, forget about the scoreboard. Let's focus on what we need to do, which is the fundamentals. And for me as a skipper, it's about setting the example. That was the way I played, was to sort of set the example in terms of the standard for training, the involvement in matches and stuff like that. So the big problem that a lot of sports teams fall into where they struggle is they start watching the scoreboard. The big problem that a lot of business people fall into is they start looking at the outcome and they forget the process. And the process is what's going to achieve the outcome if you get the process right.
Yeah, so it's remaining calm and then following the steps.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we all perform best when we're in the zone, and the technical name for being in the zone is called the flow state. And the real triggers for the flow state to stay relaxed, to stay focused on what you need to do, and then the rest will sort of take care of itself. But the relaxation piece is really critical.
How do you relax with that much pressure on you? Is there any sort of anything that you can tell yourself to?
Well, that's what it's all about. It's all about what you do tell yourself. You know, if you tell yourself that you're putting pressure on yourself because you've got to be perfect, putting pressure on yourself because you haven't got enough time, this is the mindfulness piece. It's really about just practicing the art of just being absolutely totally focused on what you need to do in that moment. And if that's in a sports situation where you're sizing up someone to make a tackle, you're totally focused on the point of contact. If it's in a sales pitch with someone, you're actually totally focused on what that person's showing you and demonstrating you in that moment, so you know how to respond in that moment to get the best effect. So it really is about just being absolutely present in that moment. And it comes with practice. And that's what the interesting thing is, that, you know, sports teams and sports players, they practice the basics. But business people, if they apply the same principle and practice the basics, then you're going to become a master at that if you're patient and you stay focused on what you need to address.
Yeah. So it's like in business, you have to be as match fit, if you like, practicing the things over and over again, as you would be if you were a sporting champion.
Oh, absolutely.
It's all about that match fitness.
Exactly the same principles. I think that's why sport is used as a sort of an example for business, because the thing with sport is that it's the purest form of competition, because when you're out there on the field or you're on a running track, there's nothing you can hide behind in terms of political boundaries or scapegoats or any of this sort of stuff. Your performance is there for all to see. So you learn pretty well that you've got to address certain things, otherwise you're exposed for not addressing them.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're also going to be talking about leadership at the Business of Real Estate, and you were made captain of the Balmain team at the ripe old age of 22, which feels very young. Do you think you were ready for it at such a young age, and is there anything you would do differently now?
Oh, yeah, there's a stack I'd do differently now. In fact, if what I know now I don't know any more in 10 years' time, then I haven't continued to improve as a leader, because I believe that the really great leaders continue to learn until the time that their memory starts to go and their physical attributes start to wither away, or the mental attributes start to wither away. I mean, for me, yeah, I do a lot different. I mean, when I came in as captain, I was appointed because I was probably the most motivated. I was
talented.
No, I wasn't exceptionally talented. I was actually pretty basic in terms of the skills, but I had a really strong work ethic and I was really committed. So that was probably why I was made captain. I didn't really have the people skills that I certainly have now. I didn't really have the knowledge about what leadership was. It was really just, I'm going to get in there and do it. You guys follow me. And it was over the years that I sort of learned that. Even when I finished playing footy and went into coaching, I thought I knew what this stuff's all about. But then coaching is a totally different spin on what leadership as well, because as a footy captain, you're out in the field, you're actually out there and you can actually set the example and you can be barking at the troops and you're sort of pushing them. But in the box, when you're up in the coaching box, it's a totally different style of leadership. You've got to actually empower your people to do stuff. So that's where the real leadership skills really do come to the fore.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting that you mentioned that, and this is a bit off topic here, but that was Darren Lehman's big skill, wasn't it? He was a great manager of the men, like off the field. He was a great manager of their minds, more so than being a, you know, this is what you must do.
Yeah, I think all of the great leaders over time have been, the truly great inspirational leaders have been the people that connect with people and they understand what the elements of that are. And it's probably barely been in the last 10 years that I've mastered that. And that's one of the things that I'm going to be sharing at the conference, is a particular skill set that I came across back in 2010, which I spent 12 months studying. It was that good. And it's something that NASA used to recruit and train all their astronauts. It's just phenomenal. It's all about keeping yourself in that peak performance space and understanding how to connect with other people.
Yeah, it's definitely such an important skill. Can we talk a bit now about the Kangaroo Tour of the Invincibles Tour, which I watched a bit about on a doco about you on the weekend, which was pretty cool. So in 1982, the Kangaroo Tour of Britain and France, you were part of a team that won 22 out of 22 matches, which was amazing. And yeah, you were known as the Invincibles. And then the captain of the team, Max, he was interviewed in 2004. And he said, the players in that squad were yet to reach their full potential. We were criticised as a weak side, but nobody knew how great a player Wayne Pearce was going to be on tour. Wally Lewis was still in his early 20s and many of the Queenslanders were in early stages of their careers. Is that how you remember it? And how do you pull together a bunch of inexperienced but obviously talented team that could get such an amazing result?
Yeah, for those people that don't know, a Kangaroo Tour, they don't have them like they used to have them, but back in the 80s and through to the Super League War. Every 4 years, there used to be a tour. An Australian team would tour over England and France. They'd take 28 players away, and you would play around about 20, 22 matches. Against five of those matches would be test matches, against three against England, two against France. The rest of them against club sides. And on that particular tour, that was the first time a touring squad had gone away in the history of rugby league on a kangaroo tour and come back undefeated. So it was a really, really big effort, and it was a wonderful achievement by the squad. And I, along with Peter Sterling and Steve Ellen, a few of the other guys, Eric Groth, we were the young guys in the side. And it was wonderful that we had such a blend of youth, and we had experienced guys like Max Krillich, like Steve Rogers, Ray Price, these guys. So it was a really good blend of emerging talent and experience that was able to basically win all the matches. And we won by ridiculously big scores a lot of the games. I think the ratio was something like, for every one try that we had scored against us, we scored 17 on average for each of the matches.
Yeah, wow.
So there were some big scores there, but it was the most amazing experience. And bear in mind, the tours were almost 11 weeks in duration. So you went just after the grand final and you came back just before Christmas.
Yeah, wow. Frank Stanton was the coach at the time. What was it that made him such a great coach to coach such a diverse team into such a great result?
Yeah, so Frank was the Australian coach. He was also my club coach at the Tigers. And the funny thing was, he gave me no inkling, because I hadn't played rep footy all that year. I played in the city side, but I didn't play New South Wales that year. And I didn't really consider that I was going to be a chance of going away on the tour. And he didn't tell me. He was my coach. And then they picked the team on the grand final night, and we were at the Leeds Club at Balmain celebrating the reserve grade team. They won the grand final, so we're up there celebrating that. And he came over and tapped me on the shoulder. He said, "They just announced the Kangaroo Tour side, and you're in it." And I'd already had a holiday end of season trip booked to Hawaii, which I'd never been to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And he said, "I guess you won't be going to Hawaii. Or do you want to go to Hawaii instead of going to England?" And I said, "Nah, I'll find someone to take my spot." So he was a good people manager, but he was actually someone who could inspire you to perform better than what you thought you could. And I think that's really the sign of a great coach or a great leader, is someone that can make their people better because they can give them that belief. And that's one of the things that a lot of people need, is they need someone to believe in them.
Yeah. Yep. That's so important, actually. If you think you can do anything, then, or if someone tells you can do anything, I think there's a much greater chance.
I mean, that's the problem with so many youth that go off the rails, that there's not people there to support them and believe in them, and it can make a big difference.
Yeah. So let's talk a bit about Wayne Pearce Advantage. So since your very long career in rugby league, you also have a coaching business now where you teach corporates and other people some of the techniques that you did take away from the sporting world. So I have a question, which I think is, you know, sort of sporting related, but in a lot of businesses these days, they'll say culture is the most important thing, you know, like culture is caught by a lot of people. And there's sometimes a big mismatch. Like in some places, you'll get someone who's a super high performer but is terrible in terms of how they treat other people. On the other hand, you'll get someone who is perhaps not as great a performer but is great at the culture. Which one is better, or how can you get the two to meet in the middle?
What you want is, you want a great performer in a good culture. You want a blend of both, and there's no reason why you can't have both. But my point of view, from my perspective, I should say, the real key to being a peak performer is you've got to have the right energy, right attitude. If you want to be your best, then you've got to identify the areas, I call them marginal gains, those areas that, what are all the little things you can do to address a significant improvement, I should say, rather than just identify one area that you're going to put all your energy into. There's a whole lot of areas that may be better served by spreading your time across those areas. That was what my approach was when I played footy. It's what my approach was when I coached. And it's also my approach to business. It's really addressing all the little one percenters that can give you incremental improvements that collectively will give you a significant improvement. So that's really critical. The other part in any business, if you're a business owner, if you've got a small business and people working for you, or if you're a small business people, you've got to work with stakeholders. It's really managing relationships. If you're a salesperson, it's really engaging the person opposite, so that in those critical moments when that person's going to make a decision, that particular person trusts you. Because what's going to generate the best relationship is not the product knowledge that you have. It's not the customer knowledge you have. It's not your smile or your looks. It's actually whether or not that person trusts you. And one of the big keys to a person trusting you is for you to absolutely acknowledge and share a common currency in that moment. So some people are really driven by the logic and facts behind a purchase. So if you miss that particular language and you go off and you're sharing them emotion or you're sharing them opinions, they don't want that. They want the facts and logic because they want to be able to synthesize that information. Vice versa, if you're dealing with someone who is an emotions type person and they're sharing some compassion and you're not responding in that same channel, then you're going to miscommunicate. Trust is going to be breached somewhat and the relationship's going to go off the rails. So, but they're the easy ones, but there's a little bit more of a complication, and that talks to this skill set that I was said I spent 12 months studying, is that there's people aren't always in the okay, good headspace. So the person who shares some facts and logic, if they go off the rails and they default into a distress pattern of behavior, which we all can default into under pressure when there's pressure of a purchase or significant purchase or something like that, then that particular person can start to go into overcomplicating the way they speak. They can start to go into a space where they'll get frustratedly angry because the other person, and that's me, is not acknowledging the language correctly, and their psychological need and their need for feeling that competency is not being acknowledged. So there's a whole range of things that I learnt and have learned over the years that talk to the predictability of human behavior. So human beings are absolutely predictable if you're able to observe the behavioral cues. And there are a number of behavioral cues that everybody presents in different ways that are absolutely anchored in that person's personality type. And this is evidence-based research, talks to this, shows this, and it's out there, but it's just not widely known. So for me, that's a fascinating part of what I've come to appreciate that contributes to improved performance.
So you can teach people how to connect, to look for the...
To observe and
to
respond.
Observe, yeah, but you can't necessarily change anyone.
No, no, this is the thing, you can. If someone goes into distress, and this is what is really important, this is what NASA took on board, this skill set, right? Because you've got astronauts up there in space and they can't go into distress and snap because of catastrophic consequences if that happens.
Yeah.
So what we can do is we can learn how to invite someone out of distress. So if somebody, for example, and it's really common, you get this person that's being super nice and under pressure, they start to melt down. I really can't do this. They invite self-criticism, which is absolutely anchored in a personality type. That's a distress behavior that if I know what the psychological need is, the psychological need for that person and why they slip into that space is because that psychological need is not being fed, is that they need some genuine compassion and acknowledgement and appreciation of just them, what a nice person they are. It's as simple as that. And there's six different types of distress patterns, only six. For the whole human species across the planet, there are only six. And the skill that comes with understanding how people and why people slip into this space is incredibly powerful as an influence tool, as a sales tool, as a leadership tool, and as a coaching tool. So there's some real merit in this. In fact, I'm actually working with the education department at the moment. I've got this particular skill set accredited for teachers because teacher training doesn't include skills on how to deal with the different personality types in a predictable manner. And it's been supported by the senior executives within the department because they realize how valuable this is for the teachers. And I've put probably about 500 teachers through the program so far, and they all think it's amazingly valuable.
Yeah, I reckon if people think leadership in real estate is hard, try managing a class of 38-year-olds.
Yeah, well, the thing is, from my point of view, the two most important leadership roles on the planet are not the President of the United States or of the Soviet Union or whatever. Number one leadership role on the planet is being a parent.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Number two leadership role on the planet is being a teacher because they spend more time with the kids other than the parents. And then you get down to your CEOs and presidents and prime ministers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a really important skill set.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you see as some of the biggest mistakes leaders make today? if you could correct one mistake that you see a lot of leaders making, what would it be?
It's not being authentic, absolutely. You know, we live in a world now where people, leaders in particular, are being put under the spotlight more than ever. And because of the mechanisms that are in place now with regards to transparency, you know, you've got social media, you've got video cameras and phones, and you know, people getting caught out. And I think trust is being breached on so many fronts. It probably has been breached for a long period of time, but the transparency now means that people are being exposed, and not just people, institutions. You know, like you've got the banks with this recent Royal Commission, you've got religious institutions, you've got big institutions, you've got individuals as well. Mm. So for me, it's really about just being authentic. And what that talks to is the fact that you've got to be the right stuff. If you're not the right stuff and you're a fake leader, and that means you don't have integrity, means you don't have an ability to stand up and express your values, then for me, that's the single biggest gap for leaders in modern times. Because we live in a world that's changing so quickly, and that puts pressure on people. So you've got to be authentic.
Yeah. You got to be the same in the office as you are at home, as you are.
Yeah. I mean, you can't afford to fake it because you're going to get caught out. So just be who you are and don't try and model yourself on somebody else.
Looking back over your career, is there any advice you would give to your younger self now?
Probably the one bit of advice for me, looking back on my younger years, particularly probably those years when I played footy and stuff like that, was I was very much goal orientated. So it was, this is the goal I want to set. I want to play State of Origin this year. As soon as I make State of Origin, I perform there, then I want to set the next goal. I really didn't spend enough time soaking up the atmosphere and enjoying the moment, because it was then bang on to the next thing. So for me, and it's some advice that I give my son, because I constantly say to him, mate, just really just enjoy the moment. For me, that would be the advice, because I look back and so many of the memories that I have were, yeah, they were around some big moments. I can still remember those. But a lot of the other achievements and other moments that were really joyous for me, I don't really have strong memories of those because I went on to the next thing. So I didn't really store those memories or feelings inside of me. So that's probably, you know, the main sort of tip I'd give myself.
Yeah, slow down a bit and
really soak it up. Yeah, and just enjoy that particular experience at that time, and then switch off and focus once you've enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what's the biggest message that you'll be delivering at the Business of Real Estate Conference in September, or what message would you like to leave attendees with that go there?
I think the key message is there's a lot more that we can do to influence other people than is currently being practiced at the moment, based on the science and predictability of human behavior. And that's fascinating for me. I think it'll be fascinating for the audience. So hopefully the audience will leave with some insights that they'll benefit from in terms of growing their businesses. So in other words, connecting with their staff, making sure their staff are in the okay space, and also their clients to drive increased revenues. So therefore, they'll leave with skills that are going to help make more money.
Absolutely. And hopefully a good yarn or two, right?
Yeah, there's plenty of yarns that, that I can share, but time's run out.
Absolutely. Wayne Pearce, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's a pleasure, Samantha Tutt.
To connect with all things Elite Agent, including the latest news, coaching and features, subscribe at our website, eliteagent.com.